Hi everyone, this is Imelda. I was going to say your moderator. This is Imelda, grateful compulsive overeater. You know, I wasn't planning to speak. I just got asked about 10 minutes ago. I was out being of service to somebody. I volunteered to pick them up from work and take them home. I volunteered. They didn't ask me for the favor, but because I know that they travel either on the bus or Uber, I thought, you know, let me do something different. In my day, I always try to do one thing if I can in my day that's different from the norm that I do repetitive every single day. Something different. Something has to change in my day. Either I'm going to compliment somebody, either I'm going to do a kind act, but outside of the meetings, because in the meetings, I'm very familiar what to do. I could do it with my eyes closed, just about. But it's outside the meetings where I get to practice a lot of things, you know, at a deeper level, principles before personalities. Our code is love and tolerance and so forth. And so I got to do that. And I dropped them off at home. And, you know, on the way back, traveling on the freeway, sometimes I use my other senses, right? And that's listening to music. I'm a music person. I'm not that crazy about TV. I never have been. I think I take that after my mom. But I like to listen to music, and right now when I parked just a few minutes ago in the garage, I got a text that they needed a speaker if I can do it. And so here I am. And I get to do this and probably not stay on for the whole meeting because I need to get off and jump on a different meeting fellowship and be there with my sponsor and her sponsor. But that's how I operate today, is staying busy, staying active, not in the food. Just quickly for those that maybe a lot of you do know already, but there may be one person that doesn't. And sometimes that's all I need, is just to connect with that one person. And so about 15 years ago, my top weight was 436 pounds. And on top of that, I had a 22-pound tumor on my right side abdomen. And my life then was very different. Really, I didn't participate in life. I just existed because God allowed it. If it was left up to me, it wasn't life. Even though I may have had suicidal thoughts, ideas, I never really took the action. Really, I didn't. But I was still brutal with my own body. By being very violent, you know, eating big volumes of food and just being stuffed all day. And when I say stuffed, I really do mean that, because as a hardcore compulsive overeater that I am, as soon as I felt a little bit of room in my stomach, I would eat. I never knew what it was like to feel hungry, much less to hear my stomach growl. Growing up in a Mexican family, you know, a typical traditional family, when you eat, you know, we use the big pots, that like commercial size pots and pans, and the spoons, the utensils are like commercial size. So that's not a serving when you use those type of utensils on your plate. But that's how we're brought up, and you're brought up to finish all your food on the plate to show appreciation, because no food could go to waste, especially how we were brought up. You know, my mother was always on a budget, and my father was, you know, who the main source of income, and her job was to make that dollar stretch and take care of us. But little did they know, or I knew, I mean, as a child, that I already had this disease looking back. As far as I can go back, I can see that I had it since kindergarten. But my parents didn't know what they didn't know. I surely didn't know. And so I would get very, very happy when they would, the teacher would ask, go around the room and ask what drink we wanted. Either it was going to be the fruit one, either it was going to be the dairy one, or it was going to be the sweet one. So the dark sweet one. So of course I always went for the dark sweet one. When the dark sweet one wasn't available, it always made me sad. The next best one was the fruit one, but I wasn't crazy about it. But I would drink it because I would get that taste of sugar. And that just made me really happy. And so looking back since a kid, I already had this trip. You know, I was already tripping. But I didn't know what I didn't know. And also, too, looking back, I can see how even when I was in the cafeteria, I used to like to swap food with my friends. So I would take their main course and I would give them my piece of fruit because that's what they liked. But I wanted the main course. So I would do that quite often, and it just wasn't enough. And so I went through that, and that was in grammar school and in junior high. Well, now I was larger. I was probably like a size 15, 16. And then in high school, I don't know, maybe a size 18. Right about there, maybe an 18. But then I didn't get all through high school. I dropped out in the 10th grade. And looking back and being in recovery as long as I have been, I can see how this goes back and stems since a child, how I couldn't stay focused, how there was already trauma since a little child, but there were things that I could not open up to my parents because that would be like voodoo if I did, and feared very much my father because in a traditional, typical Mexican family, you don't get like, it's not verbally like communication, like, oh, you're scolded or, you know, no. We would get hit with the belt, you know, with the leather belt. I know some of my friends got hit with the cord. They would use the shoe or just the hand. My father had a very heavy hand, or pull the ears, things like that. Back then, it wasn't abuse. They would allow that. Today, oh my God, it is. But I remember my father one time back then, he would say, one day you're going to appreciate this lesson. Well, it was very difficult for me to understand that. So there were a lot of things, you know, back then that I didn't know how to open up and express myself, express how I was feeling and what was going on. So I remember that I always needed sugar and carbs. You know, I just loved it. But we hardly ever got to eat out because, again, they were on a budget, you know, they had dreams, they had the American dream to prosper here in this country, to have a better life, to give us a better life, and so forth. And considering, well, that, you know, my father, he, you know, I think he only made it to junior high back in Mexico. And my mother, well, I think she just went through grammar school. But when it came to projects, they were a team, let me tell you. They were a team financially. They were all right over the years. He became an investor and things like that. But the feelings that I had were always there. And so growing up as an adult and to fast forward, I was only getting bigger. And to stay thin, my greatest wish was to stay thin, to be thin and dress however I wanted, and to have my slice of dessert too. That was my greatest obsession, right? Like it says in the big book, more about alcoholism, was to one day mimic a normal leader. When I came to OA about 15 years ago, it was, I walked into the rooms for the very first time because my friend told me about OA. I started with Weight Watchers first at 436 pounds. That's how I knew how much I weighed. And she's diabetic, and her diabetes got out of control because we were just out, eating anytime, anywhere, trying different places, drive-thrus, restaurants, whatever. And the fun was over when she told me she couldn't do it anymore because she was diabetic. All I could think about was myself, that the fun was over. I didn't think about her. But she told me, you know, I'm going to join Weight Watchers. I have to do something. Do you want to join? She said, there's two for one. There's a special. I'm like, all right, you know, that's fine. I didn't want to. But that was the beginning. And mind you, I had not visited doctors either for, it was approximately 20 years. No type of doctor. And what for? Because I already knew what, I had already diagnosed myself. And so we went, I got to my first meeting. It took me about 4 months to get my first sponsor. She said, call me tomorrow. I think I can sponsor you. Right off the bat, boom, sugar was off the table. Just like that. It wasn't difficult for me to identify my trigger food. Some people call it red food. Some people call it alcoholic foods, whatever. It's the same thing. So that was off the table. We studied the big book, and fast forward, I would jump around from sponsor to sponsor. Looking back, I can see that I wasn't surrendering 105%. I wasn't doing it because I wanted to be a part of that solution. I wanted to have a say. I knew what was good for me. I knew what I needed. That's the silly thinking now that I look back. That's the thinking of an addict, of a sick person. How can I know what I want and I'm asking for help? If I knew what I wanted, I wouldn't ask you for help. In fact, I wouldn't be here right now. But I need help. I have a problem. Each one of us that's on the phone line right now has a problem. We're all sick. Maybe some of us are sick, but on different days, but we're all sick. And that's the truth. The difference today is that as the years gone by, part of my story are relapses. And relapses for me is that it looks very different than what it looks like right now. A relapse to me, I have no sponsor. There's no discipline. There's no structure. I'm not using the tools. I'm not working the steps. And there is no God. I'm the God. I'm running on self-will. I know what's best for me, and I'm operating under a lot of fear. I fear people. I'm always watching my back, and I'm a ball of fear, and that's a sad life to live. And I've been there numerous times, and each time I've relapsed, it gets harder for me to come back to the center. You know, at 436 pounds, when I first saw the doctor for the very first time, and I'll tell you how I ended up at the doctor, because I ended up in New York because I had an abscess on my back where my bra strap is. I showed my friend. I said, can you tell me what this is? I said, I can't see. I said, but it like hurts when I lay on my back. She said, oh, Nalda. She said, how long have you had this? She said, you know, you have to go to the doctor, she said, because this can go further in and get an infection and blah, blah, blah. I said, I don't want to go. You have to go, she said. I don't know how I got there. I really believe that God had to have push me. Because think about it, 20 years later, I go to ER. You know how fearful I was? And right away, they told me that if I had a primary doctor, I said, no, I don't. They said, we can't release you without a primary doctor. My blood pressure was close to 200 over 105 or 100. They said, we can't release you. We need to give you medication, and we're going to get you a doctor, and you need to follow up. That's how I knew. And that's how it started, was to see a doctor. That was the scariest thing they had told me. Because now I was going to expose myself. Now I was going to start to know about me, about my body. And that I had already diagnosed myself. And so I went.
Over you a 5 minutes.
Thank you. I went to the doctor and they gave me medication. And they told me, I was told that this medication, I would never be off it. I thought, bullshit, I am. Watch. I'll be off it. They said, you won't. And I had heard it from other people. You can't be off it. Once you're on it, that's it. But I began to work the steps. And over the time, I just kept going at it. Just kept doing it. Because now I'm getting more involved in OA. And being told to do service and stuff. And over the years, they started to cut down little by little by little by little that medication. Until the day came, they said, you don't need to be on it anymore. I said, what do you mean? Now I was fearful to get off it. And they said, no, you don't need it. They said, you need to be off it now. When I got off it, then people that had told me, friends and whatever, that have heart problems, they told me that they can't believe it. I said, well, neither can I. I said, boy, you know what? That has to be God. I said, all I know is that I was doing my part and working program no matter what and working it really hard, even though it kicked my butt. And I got off it, and I never went back on that medication. 2 years ago, I hit bottom. When the pandemic hit, after reaching maintenance, and I came back 2 years ago. Now I put on 160-pound weight gain. Now I came back with health issues. And I was told that I was pre-diabetic and that I had significant amount of weight, that I had depression, and that I had multiple gallstones. And yeah, that's what I was told. And I just remember saying at the doctor to myself, my God, what have I done? Because for the very first time, I had never heard something like that. And the doctors were very bothered that I didn't want to take no medication. I didn't want to take it because I remember what God had done for me. And I never really thought I'd make it back this time. And that's no lie. You know, I took a very hard hit. It took me to a place where I saw a lot of darkness. And I couldn't see the light. I couldn't see hope. And so when they told me that, it was almost like they were reading my last rites. And when I got home, I called my sponsor. I said, I need you to sponsor me. He said, you already know what to do. He said, I sponsor no different. And I told him how I was feeling. He said, don't worry. He said, just work the steps. Everything will fall into place. And I did. And step one became my favorite step because I've shared many times that there was a lot involved right there at step one. Definitely humility and the willingness and the smashing of the ego and all that, the surrender, the acceptance. And then step two. That I had to come to believe again that there was someone greater than me. And I remember that there was, and I had to. And for me, the starting point was to get clean and abstinent, sober, and that I was going to do it one day at a time. And that was the hardest thing to do, was to stay sober, abstinent, from sugar and white flour, 3 meals, nothing in between, and report to my sponsor daily and follow directions whether I liked it or not. And that's the place that the best place for me it was to come in a position of submission, of surrender, complete defeat. That's it. I turned myself in. It didn't work. And so I did, and I worked the steps, taking inventory, did all of them, you know, all the inventories I had to take and give them away at step five. And,
one
you know,
minute
step six, thank you, step six and seven kind of go hand in hand. You know, we're entirely ready. And that's key right there, entirely ready. Some of the character defects have been removed. Not all of them. Not all of them. I have too many. So I juggle those every single day. But I kept moving, and 8 and 9, now making amends, and I got to do that. And that really humbled my butt when I had a. And step 10, you know, is having accountability and keeping my side of the street clean and living as a sober person should, you know, close to God and trustworthy, and just keep looking at myself and praying and paying attention to my ego and behavior and checking my motives, you know. And for me anyways, a lot of people talk about step 10 and they slam a lot of 10 steps a day. I'm not one to do that. For me, there are different types of inventories, and they're all alike. It just depends when I'm using them, you know. But I am accountable to God, not to my sponsor, you know. At step 10, I should know what my part is, you know. And at 9, you know, be set free from harmful actions, you know. Step 11 is a very pretty step, you know, prayer and meditation. Now I pray and meditate. Before, it was just a 911 that I would pray. And when God would do something good, then, oh, yeah, I had faith. God is good. He really is. And when things weren't in my favor, that was my attitude. Today is a lot different. My health has been restored. I went for my physical a month ago, and all my numbers were good. I don't take medication, but I'm a woman. I'm going through that phase, so I do take a hormone pill. But otherwise, I don't. And I'm very happy, because that is program. That is God. And the weight has come off on God's time. I don't go crazy as I used to. I exercise because I do what's good for me, but I don't obsess with numbers. And amends I made to my mother and to my sister and to people. Like I said, my character defects, I juggle those daily, and that's okay. It's a part of me. And I'm just grateful that I just want to keep learning and growing. Today I'm in a different fellowship, and I'm so happy about that to continue to keep evolving and growing, and be open to what's there for me. And just being of service, you know, that's key no matter what, in and out of the rooms. I'm going to pass with that. My contact number is 626-205-8617 Pacific time. I'm in LA. You could call or text anytime. As far as the topic goes, what step are you on, and how did it help you today? I'm going to pass.